In now to Wing Commander Deuce, who has it badly sorted him. He was in the RFC during the First World War, and he's going to tell me all about his experiences.
So, there we are.
That's right. Would that get it there all right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Surely, yes.
Yeah. I was in India with one of the merchant banks,
yes.
And during the 5 years there, I had joined right from the start. I joined the equivalent of the territorial force. We were fully trained there to the extent that we were better armed with the Lee Enfield rifle than the British Army in England. Well, when the war started in August 4th, 1914, after a little while, a notice came in the clubs there to say that from the Inns of Court Officers Training Corps, that they wanted people, would we come home and join and be commissioned in the British Army. I asked the bank if I could go, and they told me that there were other people senior to me who should have a choice before me. I pointed out that they weren't going. So I was down in Karachi, and I shipped on board a Japanese boat. There were 49 Chinese crew, 6 Japanese officers, an English captain, and I shipped on board as a purser. I paid the captain 10 shillings a day for my food, and I got 1 shilling pay when I got to England. The bank sent me my resignation after me. And when I came home, when I arrived in England, I had just was going home to my people, and I went past the HAC, and I was stopped, and what about joining up, young man? I said, for God's sake, I've just come 6,000 miles, give me a chance. And I didn't join the Inns of Court, I joined the Artists Rifles. Well, of course, I was fully trained, so the next thing I knew was that I and 3 others, one from India, 2 from South Africa, we were once put on as orderlies in the sergeant's mess. And we did so well and waited so well on the people there that they were delighted, the sergeants were. But we wouldn't take that on permanently. We said no, we were there to. The next thing, I was made an officer servant. Considering that I'd come from India where I had 11 servants, it was rather amusing. But suddenly, without any, I was commissioned to the 20th London Royal West Kent. And I went there. Incidentally, the commissioning was done fairly soon because, as I say, I was fully trained. So I went to the 20th London and in due course went out to France, and we were out there then went out to the 1st Battalion and went out there. We had quite a interesting time. I had you want all experiences. Strangely enough, on my first day in the line, I was on duty, and what I remember so vividly is I was looking over, and the Germans were shelling from an armoured train. They ran on a track, 5.9s they were. And I was so interested to see that you could see the shell suddenly come like a panther jumping. In their last 5 yards, you could see the shell coming. And I watched it, and they were gradually getting nearer and nearer. There was a young fellow there. Strangely enough, his name was Atkins. And he said to me, yes, sir, this is my first time in the line. And I chatted to him for some time and said, oh, this, that, the other. And then I walked about 20, 30 yards away from him, and just to our company dugout, and I looked round, and at that second, this thing came over, right on top of him. And the blast blew me down the dugout. But it was quite people talk about shell shock. I believe one could have got shell shock from that, but I didn't. But it was quite quite an experience, the first thing. Well, I was with the... Then we went all along in various parts at Lewes and various parts along the front up north. And then we marched down. We marched down to the Somme. And when we got down to the Somme, I was eventually... we were detailed to go over the top. Well, I had number 5 platoon, which is B Company, and then 6, 7 and 8 platoons, all B Company. Well, my platoon was to go all the way through, and then the others would come and stop in echelon behind, which I was darned annoyed about, because if I was going over first, I would have liked the others to leapfrog. But what rather interested me was the fact that we were to go at 3:15 on that Sunday afternoon. And while I was there, waiting around for it, I thought, oh, well, you wouldn't think. So the only thing to do was to go to sleep. And I found that you could just get in the side of the trench and go fast asleep there, which I did. Well, when we went over, I was most fortunate because of the 3 officers of my company. 2 were killed and I was wounded. We had an extraordinary thing of, out of 480 men we had 160 killed, 160 wounded and 160 got through. Usually you have a much larger percentage of wounded, but we got it pretty badly then. But I was fortunate in the way that as I was stepping over the wire, I was shot straight through my foot, which knocked me down. If I'd put my foot down before, I would have got it right through the knee or the leg. I lay out there, I suppose, for some hours. And then as I started to, the attack was held up, as I started to crawl back, parallel to the German line, a German came over the top, standing there with his machine gun, looking, you see, and I just had to freeze. And I can tell you that it's quite a nervous tension then, just to lie there for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, never move, so that he thinks it's a dead body. And then eventually I gradually got my head round, found he'd gone, and I was able to gradually crawl back until I... But it was quite... Well, that was all right. When I got back to UK, I was on crutches, and I realized I would be lame for a long while. So I went into the Royal Flying Corps headquarters, which at that time was a Dastrell House, where Unilever were eventually, and I think it was De Keyser's Hotel originally or something. Went into a Dastrell House, and so then I said, I want to transfer to the Royal Flying Corps. And I was abruptly told to clear off and come back when I could, I hadn't got crutches. Anyhow, I was then offered the alternative of going into the, what was called the S&T, it's now called RASC, go in there, S&T, motor transport, where I wouldn't have to march or anything, because I couldn't, I was lame. And I said, no, I've come all the way from abroad, and I don't think that I should go in a, what I might term, to a certain extent, a non-combatant role. And I put in for the Royal Flying Corps. And by that time I was back in France, but of course I couldn't march with the troops. I got instructions, I was accepted pretty quickly, and transferred, and I got instructions to report to Hesdin near Saint Paul, and I had an interesting experience there, or amusing I should call it, because when I reported I went into a large Nissen hut, and there was a table at the end with all journals, you know, the monthly periodicals on it. I was at that time a full lieutenant. I went and sat down behind this, reading one, and suddenly the door opened, and in came a captain, and he walked up to me, saluted, and said, Captain so-and-so reporting. So I said, that's all right, old chap, I'm just reporting. And I don't think he ever forgave me for it. He thought that I was just sitting there. Anyhow, from there we came back, and he along, several of us all together, and we eventually went to what was called 98 Squadron, which was Trenchard's Special Force. We were on DH-9s. Now, the first time we went over, there were just four of us in this little flight that went, four of us, and we flew over. And we went across the line. We were going about 15, 20 miles inland to bomb some place. And there was no sign. It was, of course, our aircraft made the noise, but there was, we weren't fired at or anything. It was uncanny. The Germans had not seen a DH-9 before. They thought that it were their own aircraft and that we'd put those rondelles on, that the Germans put rondelles on to deceive us. Well, we got about 15, 20 miles into our objective. We dropped our bombs. And I have never heard anything like it before. Every gun in Christendom opened up. Of course, when the bombs dropped, they realized. And there were shreds flying off the aircraft and everything. But of course, we swung round, turned tail, and we went home all right. Well, that was all very well. But every time after that, whenever we went over, they knew, of course, what we were. And we had it very hot. I had the shall we say, the opportunity to come up against Richthofen. We were going along, and suddenly to one side we saw Archie appearing, our Archie, and that was a signal to us by our gunners, look over there, and looked over there, and we saw there were 18 of these triplanes and about 5 of the Albatross fighters. And then,
will you walk after it? I'll stop it. Sorry.
We kept on to our objective. We were supposed to fly at 15,000 feet. Our flight commander, Captain Atkinson, I have a fairly good memory on these. He said, no, we want accuracy, and we flew at 3,000, which you might say was suicidal, really. Anyhow, we flew at this 3,000, 4,000, we flew onto our objective, and these 18, 23 aircraft dropped in behind us. Well, when we swung round, of course, then the battle started. And I've never seen that. It was a real dogfight. We finished up at about treetop height, water streaming out of the, radiator thing. And we got back, and fortunate we got 3 or 4 of them down, and we were fortunate we all got back. Well, we had various sorties, but my thing finished on the 25th of April, which was my birthday. We used to fly several sorties a day, starting about 3 o'clock in the morning, and the infantry, I was an infantry officer, I knew both sides, but the infantry used to say we had a cushy time. We were 10 miles behind the line, 15 miles. But in 5 or 10 minutes we were over the other side when we flew there. Anyhow, and it was tiring and that, and nerving, but on this particular morning, as usual, I was woken by my platoon at about 3 o'clock and in the air just after 4 when the light, and on this occasion there were again a flight of 4, and our leader was, because somebody had been attacked, dropped the bombs and swung, and the 3 aircraft went away. Anyhow, we got shot down, and we landed in the middle of at Plug Street, in the middle of a German battery. I was always in, what had happened was that the, I think the carburetors, on the way there I should mention that we had one Archie burst so close that it blew out a petrol tank. And I remember I had petrol in my mouth, petrol on my clothes. But fortunately, no fire. Anyhow, on this way back, I think that both the carburetors must have been damaged badly, because the engine just faded out. And when that engine faded out, there again, where we'd only had the noise of our own guns and the noise of the engine, then you could hear that every machine gun on the ground was firing at us, as well as any aircraft. And we landed, I say, in the middle of this battery. It was, of course, the German soldiers dancing around with, you know, with their bayonets and things. But a German officer came up. He said, "English or Französisch?" And I said, "Französisch." That's the only untruth I've ever told in my life, I think. But I said that because they were dead out against the English at that time, as we were bombing them so badly. And incidentally, this being shot down was on my birthday too, which is very interesting. And then when he spoke further, and after this officer, then he said, "Oh, you are English," and he treated us, two of us, quite courteously. We went before the battery commander. The battery commander said, "We want to know this, that, the other." And I said, "I am sorry, but beyond giving my name and my rank, we give no information." And he said, "Oh, we will find a way to make you speak." And I said, "Well, that is up to you. You can find a way then." From there we went on to, we were marching along there from some little prison camp with a lot of French army people. There were no British, they were French prisoners. When we got to all this marching along, I had of course these flying boots on, and being lame it made no difference, I had to walk just the same. And it was a very hot day. We got to a little village, and we stopped to get some, I thought we'd get a drink of water or something there, and a German officer came up. He said they'll move on, but the two British officers will stay. And he came up, he said, "Gentlemen, I'm a Dulwich College boy, and I make it my rule that if I can do see a British officer," he said, "I was in the OTC there, I left a few days before war, if I see any, I like to extend any courtesies." We went along to his dugout, and he said, "I must apologize, but your people have been bombing us." We had been bombing that very day. And he produced two small bottles of soda water, warm, a little piece of meat, a few things like that. Now, while we were talking, I said to him, "Well, about a year before, as an infantry officer, I was walking along, and in those days, when you met another officer, you always acknowledged each other." This was in France. And going along just behind the line, and I met an officer on horseback, and as we passed I said, "Cheerio," and he said, "Cheerio," and then I saw the cross swords on him. I thought, "Oh my God," and I thought, no arm, Major General Carton de Weert, VC. I thought, "My God, I mean, I'm only a lieutenant, he might," but no, he's "Cheerio." Well, this German officer said, "That's very strange." He said, "He is my brother-in-law." He said, "He married my sister," and he produced from his pocket a photograph of Carton de Weert and his German wife. And it was extraordinary, that. And he said to me, when he was so badly wounded, the British insisted on my sister, a German, been brought through Holland over to England to be at the hospital. So that was quite an interesting. Well, of course, we went. I was moved around various camps in Germany. I was at Rastatt, Karlsruhe, Landshut down in Bavaria. And one thing that I was rather interested, we started off in first class carriages. They had about 15 or 20, we had become the RAF on the 1st of April, 15 or 20 RAF officers who'd been shot down. We started off in first class carriages. And we had a corporal with guards to look after, just to guard us. And at one station, it was very late at night, when we stopped there, this corporal said, "Now I'm going to try to get you something to eat." The 20 of us went with him, and he searched around and he found some little cafe place where they produced hot bread and coffee and things like that. He was really decent. And then at the last minute, when we got back, he said, "Oh my God," he said, "the train is moving." He said, "Gentlemen, will you please get on?" Now, I must say that everybody got on. If we hadn't, that man would have been shot. And I mean, we were more or less on an unwritten parole. And I was very pleased to see that, because it would have been so easy to... Well, we might not have got far, but he would have got, and he'd gone out of his way. He told us at the time, "I'm not supposed to do this, but I do want to help you." We finished up in what we haven't got in the United Kingdom, in fourth class carriages, starting in first. When we were in the first class carriages, I remembered when we stopped at one station, I looked out of the window to the other line, and there was a platform, and there was a German woman, and I've never seen a person, she was just hating over at us, sending hate out from her face. It was extraordinary that she saw that we were British, and that was so that at the time I felt, well, there is a lot of hate here. Anyhow, we went along, we were to various parts that I've mentioned, and we finished up at Graudenz, which is just close to Danzig. And when we got to Danzig, we were put in a camp there, 600 officers, about 15 or 20 Royal Air Force, the rest were Army officers. And we were put in this camp. We had to, and it was an Army barracks with two or three blocks, wired all round. Well, we immediately started the usual tunneling. And the first tunnel, but then about 20 got out. I hadn't got anything by then. I hadn't any parcels, because we used to get 9/10 of a loaf of black bread a week, which meant one slice a day, and a little turnip soup. My parcels hadn't arrived from England. And incidentally, I was still, of course, lame. The 20 officers got out, but they were all recaptured after a week or 2 weeks. But we had continually those tunnels we were doing. At one time, they allowed us to use a small room place as a kitchen. Well, by putting a table in there and throwing waste paper, you could make a tunnel to the wall, and we dug there. Unfortunately, the sentry outside fell through into our tunnel. So that spoiled that. And then eventually from that camp, only one officer got away. And he was a captain in the Indian Army. He jumped out of the window with two pieces of wood with nails onto the telegraph wires. The nails held the wires apart, and he walked, got over this way. The sentry shouted at him. He threw him a cake of soap, but the sentry fired, but he slid down and he got away. And when I was back in UK in December, I read that he had got from Danzig all the way down somewhere into Romania and had died of influenza. That was the only thing. But and it was what was rather interesting was that the Germans had no sense of humour. When we started getting parcels, then we would take the bread and we would throw it to the crowds outside. In the country this was. They used to come on a Sunday afternoon, we'd throw this hard bread to them. They were really hungry. And the instructions came that officers would not throw bread out. And if you went to the window, then the sentry would fire. So all we would do is go to a window, open it, the sentry run that way, and then further down, they would throw the bread out. So that it was quite an interesting thing there. The people were keen to have it. Also, when I say sense of humour, we had notices, because some people got a table, held it out and dropped it on the sentry. And they were, officers will not drop tables from the third floor onto the sentries. We got things such as that. Then, of course, eventually, when the armistice was came about in November 11th, wasn't it? We did not hear till about the 25th of November. And then we simply said to the Germans, we're going out. And we went out and went down in the town. Incidentally, they did take us out for walks. While I'm before this, going in June, July, August, and then they used to take us out for walks around. And we had a card. It was in German. It gave your parole. And when you went out, you handed that card. Well, we would take them a walk around, and there was an airfield nearby. And that's where we liked to go, because we were watching there to see what opportunity there would be. We'd given our parole, we couldn't do anything then. But watching our opportunity to see, well, now, if we can get out, can we do anything there? Well, as things went, there wasn't the opportunity, but one day they asked for us to give all of our parole cards in. They wanted to do something with them. And I, at once, where you'd signed in two places, I scratched that out. And I said to them, they said, well, I said, well, I don't trust you. You're taking my parole card away, a signed card, and I would never give a signed card to you while I'm in here. Of course, a week or 10 days later, they made some slight alteration and handed it back. A lot of the others, they just hand the cards in, but I felt no, I wasn't willing to do that. Of course, eventually, when we got out, we were taken out, we went to Danzig. Coming back, we came back via Denmark, Copenhagen, in the steamer. And one of the finest sights I think we saw was the whole British fleet coming along, in line astern, going along there. Now, can you switch it off? Okay.
Now, it's very interesting. Were you at the Somme on the 1st of July 1916, were you?
Or yes. We marched down. We didn't go over the top on the 1st of July. We went over the top more going on for September. We marched down there. Started march down there, I might be end of June or something like that, but we were down there, the troops moved down. When we went over the top, we were at the Mametz Wood, and I wanted, and it was round there, I was going, wandering, we're a little behind the line there, and I came across the first tanks, and we saw those things, the tanks, they were the first that were ever used. They were just near Mametz Wood. And they, those tanks, when they went over, the Germans didn't understand them. Our story was that they ran up with their cans asking for coffee. But I don't know if that was true. Our attacks we did on High Wood, and therefore, when I was wounded, we were attacking Opo Labe, which is just beyond High Wood. We lost very heavily on the Somme. We went down there, I should think, 1,000 strong. And in the last attack, as I mentioned, when we went over, we were only 450 strong. The thing there was pretty terrible in those places like Mametz Wood and all those parts. And for instance, I remember when I was wounded and crawling back home, the trench was only about a foot or so deep, and I had to keep, because of the shelling, I had to keep. And I came across a person who had been shot and killed, lying in the trench. Well, the only thing to do was to crawl straight over him. It's not a pleasant thing, but you simply, when you're at war, you can't consider the pleasant thing. But you did have so many things. It reminded me vividly of when I was going, walking in the hills when I was out in Dalhousie in India that time, and going along some mountain path, I suddenly came across a narrow path, a grey monkey stretched straight up, and when he stretched out, he's nearly as long as a man is, apparently dead. But I didn't know whether he was, and I had to more or less walk over him. And I thought, now if he suddenly things out, I should go over the precipice. Well, it reminded me very much of that when, perhaps a year or two later, when I was in France and had to crawl over people like that. We saw some very, very nasty sights, as the people you've talked to can confirm.